Chapter 6. Nia saw that Ruby had her arms around Jade, comforting her while she sobbed.
You can't do this. You know you have to do the right thing.
Jade stood back, shook her head.
I have to decide this myself. The main thing is, Ruby, you're not to tell anyone. But it doesn't only concern you.
At that moment, Ruby seemed to notice Nia.
Sorry to interrupt, Nia said.
Jade wiped her face.
It's all right, I'm leaving.
She pushed past Nia.
Can I help?
Nia asked Ruby.
No, Jade and I will sort this out, said Ruby, but she looked very pale and worried. I'd better get back out there.
And with that she left. When Nia returned to the main room, she saw Ruby pick up her cardigan and bag, say something to Richie, and depart. Richie turned to Ian.
I'd better go and see what's up, but I'll be fine for our swim later. I'll text you.
Elvira was leaving, presumably off to see her mother. Ethan and Jade were arranging to meet at the rescue centre, but Ian went back and sat with Lucy to have a drink with Joe. Looking at Lucy now, Nia thought she seemed completely at ease, laughing and smiling, far more relaxed than earlier. Nia decided it was also time for her to leave, and after saying her goodbyes to Ian, Joe and Lucy, she left. Back at the house, she received an enthusiastic greeting from Romeo.
Well, that was a bit weird, she told him. Honestly, Romeo, I'm not sure where we have landed. I reckon we could do with a good walk.
She ran upstairs and found her old trainers. She quickly put them on and went down to find Romeo waiting.
Sensible dog, she said, stroking his head. All you are thinking about now is your walk. Brilliant.
They left the house and headed on down the road and climbed down onto the beach. It was deserted and only her footsteps could be heard crunching on the shingle, mingling with the waves softly lapping the shore. The moon shimmered on the black, oil-slick sea. Nia walked down to the water, took her trainers and socks off and paddled. The icy cold waves lapped her feet, but it was gentle, cleansing. She took a deep breath. Gwen was right. She could breathe here. For the first time in what felt like a long time, she felt, well, almost happy.
Thank you, she whispered,
and then looked around, embarrassed. Of course she was alone, and she looked at the sea, which seemed to glint in reply. Carrying her trainers, she walked back up the beach. Her phone rang, and without thinking, she answered. It was Chris, just checking in. As pleased as she was to hear from him, it broke the spell. She tried to tell him about the people in the close, her evening at White's, but he sounded bemused.
You went there to rest, not to go socialising.
I know, but it's nice to meet some new people. How is school? I guess you've been in today.
As she said the words, she felt herself holding back. She had to trust him, and part of that was not making him account for every moment. He told her briefly about some paper he was preparing for the governor's meeting the following evening, and eventually the call ended. For some reason, her heart was thumping against her chest. She got up and went back to the sea, where she stood matching her breath again to the motion of the waves, and slowly the trembling subsided. Eventually she turned and went back up the beach and sat down. As always, after an attack like that, she felt exhausted. She put her head in her hands, closed her eyes.
Are you okay?
Startled, Nia opened her eyes and saw Ruby, who came and sat down next to her.
Yes, I'm fine, said Nia, trying to steady her voice,
and then added,
I thought you were off to your charity work this evening.
Not yet. I like to come here, calm my mind, talk to the sea before I go.
You talk to the sea as well?
I do.
To me it's like family. When you grow up on an island, it's never far. It surrounds you. It has watched me since I was a baby. It knows me.
Ruby shrugged. I expect that sounds stupid to you.
No, I don't think so. I find a lot of comfort being close to the sea. I wish we'd had more holidays by the sea, but my husband doesn't like it. I think he gets bored. He walks up and down the beach like a caged animal, which is strange when you see such expanses of emptiness. He's a city person, I guess. Still, I'm glad I'm here now. Ruby glanced down at Nia's naked feet. Good. It must be strange being here alone, without your husband. But of course you said he's very busy. He must miss you. Nia shrugged. I'm not sure. He says he does. Why do you say that? It's complicated. I came to sort myself out, but things just go round and round in my head and I don't resolve anything. You could talk to me if you want. I'll not tell anyone else. Nia picked up some pebbles, rubbed them between her fingers. I don't think I can. You'll think I'm mad. I doubt it. In my work with this charity, I sometimes listen to people share their problems. Sometimes it's not that you need someone to give you advice, but saying things out loud can help you sort them out for yourself. Nia let out a long breath. Well, maybe if I tell you briefly, but please don't say too much to Gwen. She only knows the bare bones of this. She has no idea how bad it's been. Of course not. Okay. A few weeks into the new term last September, one of the teachers at Chris's school, who is also a client of mine, told me she had seen Chris kissing the drama teacher, Sian Gray. I'd met her a few times at social things. In fact, she had taught my daughter the year before. I liked her. She was young, very pretty. She'd really turned the drama department around. I know Chris thought highly of her, and he helped out a lot with the productions they did. It had never entered my mind that there was anything between them. I was very upset. Talked to Chris, who was very sorry. It had been after a few drinks after school. It meant nothing and would never happen again. The problem was I couldn't let it go. In October, I went to a school social and saw her with him, and it seemed to me they were very flirtatious. You believed that your husband might be having an affair? The words seemed so stark, shocking even, said out loud. Well, yes, I think I did. I became obsessed with it, checking his phone, even going up to the school when he said he was working late to check his car was there. It was usually there, and I'd feel really stupid, but sometimes it wasn't. Of course, it was hard to ask Chris about it, as I didn't want him to know I'd been checking up on him. I had to make up stupid stories, like I'd gone up to see someone else at the school or something. It was madness. And what did Chris say? He always had a good explanation, said he'd forgotten that he'd gone out for an hour to see someone. I felt very foolish, but couldn't stop. There were other things, like a new watch he started wearing. He told me it was a present from the drama department to thank him for his help. But it seemed a very expensive present for kids to give a teacher. Chris knew how anxious I was. He kept trying to reassure me, bought me presents and the like. But I'd read online that was something men did if they feel guilty, so you see he couldn't win. Things came to a head one weekend in January. At Chris's suggestion, Safi and I went away for the weekend. A final time together before she went off on her travels. It was fun. We went to London, saw a play. But when I got back, I was sure the duvet had been changed. Chris said it hadn't, but I felt sure Sian, this teacher, had been in the house. I had no proof, only a feeling. I felt I was going mad. I became so tired, exhausted with it all, that I went to the doctor, and he suggested I take some time off work. That is when I left my job at the salon. That was a bit drastic. I know, but I didn't know how long I was going to need, and to be honest, I knew they would always take me back. I had a very good reputation. My regular clients were upset, but they moved on to other people at the salon. And did it help? No, not really. If anything, I had too much time to think then, because of course Safi then went away. Everything came to a head a few weeks ago. There was another school social and I got drunk. There was a terrible scene. She paused, cringing. I can't go into it all. I was chatting to Gwen, just saying how tired I was, and she suggested coming here.
It sounds to me like you have been under a lot of stress. For what it's worth, I don't think you sound crazy at all.
Ruby gave her a gentle smile.
Maybe try not to think about it all for a few days. Go for walks. Enjoy the island. Give yourself some time to rest. I understand what you mean about something going round and round in your head. Sometimes you need to leave something be, and then, suddenly, you realise what you have to do.
Nia turned to her.
You sound like you have been through something as well.
Ruby nodded.
A lot, yes.
And she pressed her lips together.
Do you want to talk about it? I hear it helps, said Nia. Look, I'm a stranger here. I'll be gone soon. And don't forget, I was a hairdresser like you. If I didn't know how to be discreet, I'd have lost most of my clients years ago. Well, okay. It would be interesting to see what you think about something. I've not shown anyone, not even Gwen, so don't tell her about it.
Ruby leant over, and from her hemp shopping bag, she removed a small twiggy doll and handed it to Nia.
What on earth is this? Asked Nia.
It's a voodoo doll. It's used to curse people.
Good grief! Who on earth sent you that?
I have no idea.
I didn't realise people still did things like this.
Oh yes, I've seen pictures of them on social media. You can buy them online. They're very popular again. People use them to try and help them lose weight, pass exams.
So they're being used for good things.
That's the nice side of them. Others, like this one, are much darker. You can see there's no kind intent in this.
Using the torch on her phone, Nia looked more closely at the doll. She could see the wizened face was carved onto a piece of driftwood, the eyes narrow, cruel, the mouth a thin, tight line. It was skillfully made, the main body from twigs, the dress of blue silk. Most disturbing were the pins thrust into its eyes, mouth and heart.
I don't like it. It's nasty, Nia whispered.
However, seeing the fear in Ruby's face, she added,
You do know it's all nonsense, don't you? A doll, voodoo doll, or whatever you call it, with a few pins in it, can't really harm you.
Ruby nodded.
I know this voodoo doll itself can't harm me, but if you were sent one of these, you'd not just laugh it off, would you?
Nia shook her head.
No, I wouldn't. When did you get this?
Last February. I found it on our doormat wrapped up in paper when I got up early one Monday morning.
You've held on to it all this time. Have you any idea who sent it or why?
The problem is, I know it has to be someone from the close. You see this wooden button? That was taken from my cardigan on Sunday night the week before. I'd thought I'd lost it in White's, but Joe never found it, and when I looked again at my cardigan, I saw it had been cut off.
Someone cut it off your cardigan to sew onto this voodoo doll.
Apparently, if you add things that belong to the person you are cursing, such as hair, clothing, that kind of thing, the curse works a lot better.
But that's awful. Still, if it's someone in the close, you must know who did this.
Well, I have ideas. The driftwood and silk are materials I've seen in Lucy's workroom. We had these craft sessions.
Yes, Lucy told me. You, Elvira and Jade?
Yes, we made different things, and I remember someone saying you could make little dolls, but no one did.
Who said it? I can't remember.
But you think it was one of them. Not Jade, she'd never do something like this, but maybe Lucy or Elvira. But do either of them really hate me?
Ruby shook her head.
No, I'm not being fair. They wouldn't do something like this to me. But who would? I know I upset people. People get fed up with me. But I always thought people realised I meant well. But this means someone has far darker feelings towards me. It's the intent. There's hate behind this. Someone sat making this thing all the time with hate in their heart.
Someone who had been harbouring hate and anger against me for some time.
Oh, no. No one hates you.
Oh, they do.
Her hand started to shake.
It scares me, Nia, not just to think of someone hating me like this, but also hiding those feelings from me. It's so calculating, sinister somehow. What else have they been planning?
Nia looked down at the voodoo doll. You shouldn't take this too seriously. It's probably someone messing about. Ruby shook her head.
No, there is more to it than that. This voodoo doll is just a sign of the hate I know is hiding out there. It isn't a game. I've been thinking about what to do with this for a while now. Tonight I have decided.
Ruby stood up.
Do you want to come for a walk along the pier?
Nia called Romeo and left the beach with Ruby. The beach was partially lit by the light at the end, an old-fashioned street lamp. When they reached the end of the pier, they found only one fisherman that night. He was busy sorting out rods and didn't look up as they went past. They walked right to the end, and then Ruby lifted up the doll and threw it out as far as she could. For a few seconds it floated in an area lit by moonlight, but a wave quickly swallowed it whole, and it disappeared.
It's gone now, said Nia. The voodoo doll has, but the hate is still out there. The hate remains.
People get angry, it blows over, said Nia. Ruby grabbed her arm.
Exactly, but hatred stays, it festers.
Ruby shivered. They walked back down the pier quietly, neither spoke until they reached the close.
Good luck with work this evening, said Nia. And thank you for coming along the pier with me, replied Ruby, and walked back up the close.
Nia entered the house, went into the kitchen. As hard as she tried to resist them, Ruby's words kept echoing in her head. The hate remains. Ruby had been talking about someone here, someone in this close had sent her that horrible doll. The idea seemed incredible to Nia. She pictured everyone at White's, so normal, conventional, so, well, nice. And yet one of them had made that thing, one of them was hiding hate so deep, so well disguised, that even people who knew them well had no idea what was going on in their heart.
Jade had been right. There was something sinister going on here. And this was the place she'd come to sort herself out, somewhere she'd thought would be safe.
Her mind went back to Chris. That initial feeling of relief at talking about her problems with Chris was wearing off. A feeling of hopelessness started to set in. She still had no idea if she'd been right or wrong. She still had that terrible feeling of shame. Nia went to the fridge, and as she frequently did recently, she poured herself a glass of wine, threw it back quickly. That first hit, that sense of the world stepping back, the memories becoming opaquer, crept over her. She poured another glass. People drank to forget. Wasn't that what they said? Nia opened the back door and let Romeo out and took the bottle and glass out with her. It was as she was pouring her third glass that she heard someone say,
"Good evening."
Lucy was peering over the fence, but Nia realised she was having problems focusing. She'd drunk too much too quickly.
"Evening, Lucy,"
she attempted to say, but she knew she was stumbling over her words. She was aware of Lucy looking at her, judging her, and leant forward, picked up the bottle, and staggered back into the house.